The following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. I'm your host, Reverend Jeff Bolin, commander of the Infernal Legion, and today's going to be a little different style of episode. This is a Sinister Scuttlebutt episode. We are going to talk about some news around the military, but instead of going article by article like we usually do, we're going to do this as more of a kind of open-ended panel discussion. How can we have an open-ended panel if we don't have a panel? So please help me welcome my lovable and furry co-host, Reverend Dwayne Burns, the VSO of the Infernal Legion. Dwayne, how the hell are you, brother?
I'm doing good.
You're looking better. I said this before we started recording. You got some color in your cheeks. You look like you're back to life a little bit.
I'm in pain, but that's every day.
Right. Eventually, you just learn to adapt and overcome, right?
Or take Percocet.
Or take Percocet. Nice. And joining us in the third chair, you know him, you hate him. It's Warlock Rick Kohlmeyer, the Vice Commander of the Infernal Legion. Rick, how are you, brother?
The big dick. I don't know about Percocets, but I'll sure as hell smoke some weed with you, Dwayne. Works a lot better on the pain.
I've got some of that, too.
All right, and joining us in fourth chair to round out this panel is the one and only, the Director of Special Activities for the Infernal Legion, the co-founder of the Infernal Legion, Satanist Raul Atondo. Raul, how are you, brother?
Muchas gracias, Señor Jeff Bolin. Thank you so much. Let's get this show on the road. I'm doing great.
All right, guys. Religious accommodation in the military. Well, anybody who's been paying attention to a lot of the news coming out around veterans and the military has noticed a particular push for new styles of headdress, beards, new tattoo regulations. It seems to be a whole large movement happening within the military where people are trying to get religious accommodations for special things. Given that we are a, let's say, non-mainstream religion, I thought it might be an interesting topic to get into. And as I said at the beginning, we're not going to go article by article. I just kind of want to talk about this and see how four salty vets feel about the young guys possibly getting the chance to wear beards or turbans or, in one case, a full-on Native American headdress while in uniform.
Maybe it's the fact that I grew up military, served military. There's a lot of tradition in the military and our uniform and our covers. I mean, even something as simple as like the Bonnie or something that, you know, for the longest time was only for special forces. You know, nobody else was wearing those. And, there's enough give and everything else with the military and with uniform standards and stuff. And I understand that they're trying to loosen things up because they can't meet recruiting quotas and everything else. But I think we're getting a little bit ridiculous with trying to meet everybody's little quirk or whatever it is with their religion. You know, we can't accommodate everybody and still maintain a uniform in our military. You know, it would just get haywire if we start letting the military run loose like we are with society.
How do you feel, Dwayne? You're probably the oldest and saltiest among us. How do you feel about the young guys possibly getting beards and Native American headdresses?
I can't see the beards happening. Beards don't happen because of NBC training.
Yeah, okay, so that's an interesting point. I want to talk about it. Let's talk specifically about beards before we get into anything else. The argument has almost always been, at least as long as I was in and before that, and now to this day, the argument that I see online has always been that your protective mask cannot form a proper seal with a beard. But there is an entire section of the military who probably sees more shit than any of us who was required to have beards. I'm not sure how that tracks. They're obviously more likely to encounter gas in their data. And I'm talking about special operations community specifically. Yeah, so specifically tier one units like the Combat Applications Group, the Naval Special Warfare Development Group, commonly referred to as Delta Force and SEAL Team 6, the SEALs in general, the special forces on certain missions. Now, in garrison, special forces usually have to be clean shaven, but in combat, they tend to grow beards out. How does that jive with the idea that a protective mask won't seal when they have to have beards? They're more likely to encounter gas on the battlefield.
This episode is brought to you by the Warlock Emporium. The Warlock Emporium is creating bespoke items for the chosen few. The Warlock Emporium is the only authorized seller of items bearing the Warlock Sigil, created by Magister Dr. Robert Johnson, author of The Satanic Warlock. The Warlock Emporium is now offering a 15% military discount. Visit thewarlockemporium.com for more information.
It also doesn't jive with, and I don't know, I mean, I know I dealt with it on several different occasions, African-American men who could not shave, you know, because they would get the real bad bumps or stuff like that. And they would
shaving profiles, yeah.
Yeah, they would get a waiver so that they wouldn't have to shave, but they would have to keep it, you know, at a certain length, which I believe was like 3/8 or shorter.
Something like that, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, but so, again, there we have beards. You know, my chief had a beard. You know, he was a black man who had a beard, and he had a waiver on him. You know, at my first duty station. You know, so yeah, I mean, there's beards all over in the military. So yeah, I don't agree with the gas mask bit of it, especially.
I feel like that's just a lame excuse, right? Like, I'm not saying that there's not legitimate reasons to not allow beards among the ranks, but that seems like a lame excuse.
I mean, my beard never got in the way of my scuba diving suit or anything.
Right.
Now there are people military. There's people of like the Sikh religion who are out there in the military. I can remember one army officer, he's a major, full-on beard, turban, ready to go.
I mean, haven't there been some turbans in the military for a minute?
There have been, yes. There's always, and that's why we're kind of talking about religious accommodation in general instead of just specific instances. There's always been certain things allowable under religious exemption in the military. For Sikhs, their headdress has been one, but it seems to be a much bigger push happening right now and happening for a lot of people. And,
well, how about the long hair with the Sikhs as well?
Yeah. Speaking of hair, one of our Legionnaires sent me a list of regulations. He served in the Canadian Armed Forces, and he sent me a list of regulations. This is updated, so I'm going to take this to a whole new level. The most recent updated regulations for dress and appearance in the Canadian military, which allow for hair to be dyed any color you choose. You are allowed to wear barrettes and hair ties and other things like that in your hair. Wigs are authorized. The only rule against any of it is that it has to be functional with your military headgear. So when I read this and I responded to him, I said, can you imagine that you have your bright blue polyester wig on, complete with metal barrettes, and a mortar sets the building that you're taking cover in on fire? You don't have a face anymore. I mean, that wig is going to go up like that.
Oh, yeah. You're done.
The people that are talking about these exemptions because they're garrison, and they look at if Specialist Raul Atondo is in a formation, and it's one thing to show them if I'm being promoted or whatever, and they see us, all in uniform, and that's one see us in garrison. But they don't see us overseas, and they don't see what the life is like. So the people that are asking about these fucking shitty shitbag exemptions don't see what war is like over there.
Shitty shitbag exemptions. That was amazing. One of the interesting thing with the beards, the neo-pagans, especially the Norse neo-pagan people crying for an exemption to wear a beard. So there's kind of two different debates happening, right? One is, should people who have a religion that requires facial hair or long hair or special headgear be allowed to do that, and under what circumstances? And the second is, should just everybody be allowed to have a beard in the military?
My quick answer to that is no. Hell no. I mean, if those things are that important to you that you can't set them aside for 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, whatever the case may be, to do your time, to do your tour, to do whatever it is you were going to do with the military, then don't join, you know, because when you join, I mean, we have a uniform code that we follow in each of our branches, and I understand exemptions for health purposes.
But I've got the right.
I think it's well understood that we sign our rights away when we sign that enlistment contract.
Exactly. You know,
it's well understood in us, but nowadays,
right.
nowadays, agree to conform to these rules, and that is the way we are going to operate our lives as long as we're enlisted. Yes, society's letting everything fucking pass is okay, but the military is not fucking society, and if it becomes a society thing, Our military is going to be kind of collapse.
Yeah, well, there is a very legitimate argument for that, because the military, by its very nature, has to be warrior culture. It has to be a separate culture from the rest of society. In order to accomplish its mission, it has to be. And I've talked about this on this podcast and other podcasts before. There is a distinct warrior culture within the military. But that provides an interesting kind of third side look to the beard situation. Because I don't know if you guys have heard this.
Allow beards.
Yeah, the American military used to allow beards. Currently, I think every major military force in the world allows beards except for the United States. And there's some interesting genetics behind the idea of the beard. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this or not, but supposedly, a lot of geneticists theorize that people who are capable of growing beards today come from warrior stock. That the only people back then who used to be able to grow beards were warriors. And they kind of got interested in this and started studying the genome because they were testing the ability of punches on the face. And it was shown that those with a smooth face or who couldn't grow facial hair, their jaws would break easier and they would get knocked out faster. There's almost a genetic argument to be made saying that the beard equals warrior. And since the military has a warrior culture, maybe they should allow beards.
But then you have the societal view on it, which for a great, great many years, I would go as far as to say centuries, the beard was viewed as dirty. It was viewed as somebody who would have something to hide, their face or anything. That's why clean shaven has always been the most common look you see among the elite.
And that's why it took form. That's why it took shape in the military as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm, you know, so, you know, that
post Civil War.
And that's what I'm saying. You have to bring that societal view into it. Our military. We have an appearance to put up not only to ourselves, to our country, but to the world. And if we look like a bunch of haphazard shitheads out there, go like the Canadian Army, we have some fucking pink hair, blue hair, and some rainbow brights over here with a Fu Manchu and a fucking beard and a goatee down here.
I think dyed hair and wigs is a step too far for the military. I am 100% on board with that. Is way too fucking far.
You know, the military's been pretty lenient as far as letting men highlight their tips or women, you know, do frost or do whatever else with their hair. But no, this any color shit, that's fucking ridiculous. I expect that from McDonald's, but not the Canadian government or the Canadian military.
Right. The idea that I kind of came up with is like a happy medium here that maybe, and this is not with the beards necessarily. The beards are an interesting topic. I don't think there's an easy solution to, but what about in class A's, in dress uniform? If you have a turban or a traditional Native American headwear or whatever, like a duty uniform is a duty uniform. You're supposed to get dirty in that uniform. You're supposed to be crawling under trucks.
I could see accepting maybe replacing your buttercup with your fucking turban or something like that, but no.
This episode is brought to you by Duffel Blog. Read in the Pentagon and around the world, since 2012, Duffel Blog has been the most trusted news source for the American military. Duffel Blog is the first and only satire newsletter devoted to the United States military community. Visit duffelblog.com for more information.
When it comes to your class A's, hell no.
So, cut caps all the way, huh?
No. Either get your cunt cap or get your Dixie cup, you know, one of them. But I love my naval traditional uniform. I love our dress uniform. I hate those 13 motherfucking buttons. Other than that, I thought it was one of the best looking dress uniforms out there.
The Marines have the best dress uniform around. There's not even arguable. I say that as a soldier.
I like my Cracker Jacks. And I don't want people to misunderstand me. I have nothing against anybody's religious beliefs, anybody's anybody's anything. But when it comes to my military, no. I think a lot of this shit needs to be left at the door. If you're going to put your name on the contract, you're going to conform to the standards that are required to serve in my military.
Well, and that's a very interesting standpoint. So let's shift gears real quick and talk about Satanism and our religious exemptions. Or might I say, our lack thereof religious exemptions in the military. We have a long history of Satanists in the military, which we have expounded on time and time again on this show. We used to have, when it was still published, the Chaplain's Handbook used to have an excerpt on the Church of Satan detailing rituals and things that we would do for our religious practice. The chaplaincy corps has always kind of instructed their would-be chaplains on the idea that there's going to be Satanists in the ranks and whatnot. But what exemptions do Satanists get in the military? I'm going to tell you, and the answer may surprise you. None. Zero. And that's by design. We hold the stance as Satanists of responsibility to the responsible. If you are going to enlist in the United States or serve as an officer in the United States military, you are taking responsibility to uphold the standards that the military has set forth. If you are responsible, then you are taking that responsibility upon yourself and taking that duty upon yourself. As a Satanist, it is your personal mission to adhere to those standards. So we do not ask the military to exempt anything for us. We ask ourselves to adapt to the military or don't join. That being said, I've told this story numerous times. I'll kind of briefly tell it again. When I was a young PFC on my first deployment, and I was stationed in the Victory Base complex, it was Camp Liberty, Baghdad, Iraq, I was chosen by my unit chaplain to become the Distinctive Faith Group Leader, or the DFGL, for a group called the Victory Base Open Circle, which was essentially an alternative religious service set up on base. Now, I find it kind of ironic. They call it Distinctive Faith Group Leader, but then they just grouped all the quote-unquote alternative religions into one big service. And two, that they picked a Satanist of all people to run this thing. As many of you listening know, Satanism is not an ecumenical religion. We don't want to get along with other religions. Whatever, I now had a responsibility that was given to me, and I had a lot of fun with it. I was able to do weekly kind of study groups where everyone would get together. One of the things I love studying is world religions, so it was awesome to have 20 people in the same room all taking time to talk about their beliefs and how they practice it, and we all got to learn from one another. That was cool. And I started setting up once a month full moon rituals where we would go and get DFAC, the dining facility, would give us basically platters of food and wine for us to have this kind of weird interfaith ritual that I had to write. It was a really interesting experience. What I told myself going in and what I stuck to except for one time was that, all right, this is my duty. This is the job they've given me. I have to accomplish this mission. But a lot of this doesn't jive with Satanism, so I'm not going to mention Satanism. I'm not going to bring it up. The one exception, June 6, 2006, I was heartbroken that I was in Baghdad and not Los Angeles for the big satanic high mass that happened. So I led my own in Baghdad, and that was a lot of fun. Through the course of this, never once did I ask for an exemption. In fact, I made it perfectly clear because we were in a combat zone. All of us had other duties and responsibilities to attend to outside of our religion. I made it clear to everyone, these are the days that we'll have our ceremonies. These are the days we'll have our little study groups every week. If your duty demands that you can't be there, too fucking bad. I'm not writing any passes for your commanders to let you out. That's just how that goes. We have a job to do here that's way bigger than praying to Odin or whatever it is that they wanted to do. So once again, even with a large collection, we had pagans, we had Thelemites, we had general occultists, we had some forms of like Santeria, voodoo practitioners involved. And none of them did I ask for an exemption for, and so none was granted, even though some of them did ask me to try. So I guess in that way, I kind of injected Satanism into this little experiment we were doing in the desert.
I mean, just that experience sounds cool because I love studying religions. I've always found it fascinating why man has to believe in something greater than himself and all the different religions and spinoffs of different religions as they've gone through history and stuff. But studying them in books and stuff and then being able to sit around with people and watch and observe and listen and learn, I mean, yeah, which I've got to do with some pagans and some stuff like that, but You know, you've got to go further into it, which, you know, I'm a little jealous. That sounds like it was a fun.
It was a cool experience. I ended up really enjoying it, even though I went in super skeptical of whether or not I even wanted to be a part of this thing. So, not that I had a choice. Like I said, I don't know how word got back to my chaplain that I was, I was never closed. I've talked about this before too. I was always open about being a Satanist, but I don't know how my chaplain said, "Hey, let me grab the unit Satanist and put him in charge of this group for the entire base complex." And we had all branches of service, contractors, civilians coming to this thing. So it was really weird. But one of the cool things about that is I got to make special coins for everybody. And everyone got a little Victory Base open circle coin when they redeployed back to the States. So that was fun, too. It was a cool experience. Did it inform any of my views on religious exemptions in the military? No, because I still stand by the satanic answer to that. I really think that religious exemptions are unnecessary. But I think there is still an argument to be made for beards. I think there is.
I always wanted my beard when I was in, but my mustache.
Well, gents, any final thoughts on religious exemptions in the military?
Can't live by the rules, don't sign your fucking name.
That's it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and on the other side of this break, we're going to hear from Magister Adam Campbell, who is going to talk about the Chinese military recruiting veterans to train their pilots, and a very interesting constitutional law that I'm sure many veterans don't know about. We'll be right back after these messages from Radio Free Satan, right here on the official Inferno Legion podcast.
Why start your mornings early when you can sleep in late and wake up later to a freshly brewed cup of Radio Free Satan? Radio Free Satan is infernally roasted, with a complex taste to suit your indulgence. It's sinful, that's why it tastes great. So pour yourself another helping of this podcast and others at RadioFreeSatan.com.
Welcome to the Metro. Your host, Reverend Jeff Ivins, brings you a weekly time trip back to the 1980s with songs from the decade of decadence, only on Radio Free Satan. Hail Satan. I'm tired of listening to you talking around, twisting around to make me think you're straight down the line.
Well, man, it is now official.
The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, the finest in rockabilly, psychobilly, vintage country, swamp rock, surf rock, doo-wop, this potpourri of madness. The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, Radio Free, goddamn Satan. I'm Clint Mephisto, coming at you from the Double Cross Ranch. Booze in one hand, microphone on the other, swamp thing on the telly, and the good tunes in front of me here at the computer. The Shit-Kickin' Road Show, Radio Free, Satan.
Damn! You will excuse me, won't you? Well, thank you very much.
Coming in! Ho! Live! Hey! At ease! Listen up, soldiers. While we're out here, you will be taking all commands from the tower. And I am the tower! Do you understand?
Yes, Sergeant!
Welcome to the Tower, your dose of military news delivered with an infernal edge. My name is Magister Campbell, and today we are discussing China recruiting U.S. military pilots. This is from the article, China Wants to Recruit Military Pilots from the U.S. and its Allies to Strengthen Chinese Air Power, Bulletin warns, from NBCNews.com by Dan DeLuce, June 5th, 2024. The warning from the U.S. and its four closest intelligence partners follows several arrests of U.S. members for allegedly trying to pass info to China. The U.S. and its intelligence partners warned on Wednesday that China is working to recruit current and former Western military pilots and other service members to help strengthen Chinese air power and gain insights into Western aviation tactics. Describing China's efforts as a persistent threat, the warning came in a joint bulletin from the so-called Five Eyes intelligence partners. Five nations that share sensitive intelligence: the U.S., the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. China's People's Liberation Army, PLA, is using private companies in South Africa and China to hire former fighter pilots from Canada, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, Australia, the United States, and other Western nations to train PLA Air Force and Navy aviators, the bulletin said. The PLA wants the skills and expertise of these individuals to make its own military air operations more capable while gaining insight into Western air tactics, techniques, and procedures. The insight the PLA gains from Western military talent threatens the safety of the targeted recruits, their fellow service members, and U.S. and allied security. This threat continues to evolve in response to Western government warnings to their military personnel and public. So this notice seeks to continue highlighting this persistent, adaptive threat, it said. The bulletin said the U.S. and its Western partners have taken steps to try to counter the threat, including imposing commercial restrictions on a test flying academy in South Africa and Chinese organizations linked to the spying operations and prohibiting former military members from working with China. The bulletin advised current and former Western military members to be on the alert for possible approaches, including job offers from privately owned companies that hide their links to China. NATO members in January held a conference of senior officers and officials to examine how to counter China's spying efforts. The warning from the intelligence partners comes amid growing concern about China's military buildup and recent drills around Taiwan, which Beijing described as punishment after the self-governing island held elections. China says Taiwan is part of its territory and has vowed to take control of the island by force if necessary. Wednesday's bulletin also follows a series of cases in which U.S. military service members have been charged with trying to sell sensitive information to China. In 2022, former Marine Corps fighter pilot Daniel Duggan was arrested in Australia for allegedly training PLA pilots how to land on aircraft carriers. Duggan, who denies the charges, is awaiting extradition to the U.S. In March, U.S. Army intelligence analyst Corbin Schultz was arrested and charged with conspiring to sell sensitive defense information to China. He has pleaded not guilty, and in August last year, two Navy sailors were arrested for allegedly relaying sensitive military information to China. Wenheng Zhao pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 27 months. Jin Chao Wei has pleaded not guilty. These arrests are a reminder of the relentless, aggressive efforts of the People's Republic of China to undermine our democracy and threaten those who defend it, Assistant Director of the FBI's Counterintelligence Division, Suzanne Turner, said at the time. A spokesperson for the Chinese Embassy in Washington expressed unfamiliarity with the specific allegations and declined to comment, but said in a general statement, "In recent years, some U.S. officials have been quick to accuse China and smear the normal exchanges and cooperation between China and the U.S., which is not conducive to the healthy development of China-U.S. relations." All right, so this, on the surface, you know, it can be a little tricky, a little sticky, because the reality is once you've served, you are no longer a military member. You know, you have generally, like, 4 years or 8 years of reserve commitment, you know, just in case you have to be called back into service due to unforeseen circumstances. But after that, you're a civilian. However, as a veteran myself, I was not aware. I mean, I've been removed for, you know, like over 20 years at this point from my military service. But if someone came up to me asking, you know, offering me a really lucrative job to, you know, do anything that was similar to what I did on a contractual basis in the military, and they were operating in the United States or, you know, wherever I happened to be living at the time, how would I know that they are then tied back to a foreign government in opposition to the US? How would I know that? Unless they led with it, there's no way for me to know. You could easily hide it through dummy corporations. So it's not like I have to suddenly become an intelligence analyst myself in order to find out if this is an above-the-board corporation that's offering me a great opportunity. And we have contracts in the United States from United States corporations that do offer these types of contracts that are okay for them to take, for veterans to take. So it's really difficult for the veteran to really know if it is an above the board or not above the board assignment. Now, it would be clear if suddenly they fly you out to South Africa or China and say, train these Chinese military soldiers. Then of course it would be obvious and you would have to then quit that job because it is actually against the law. So for those of you who may not know, in the U.S. Constitution under the Emoluments Clause, it applies to all retired military personnel. And in essence, it says employment of all retired military members, both officers and enlisted, and both regular and reserve, by a foreign government is prohibited unless a waiver is granted. That straight up says, if you are a retired military member, no matter what rank you held, you cannot, by law, work for a foreign government in any capacity without a waiver granted by not only the United States Department of Defense, but also the military branch and Secretary of State. You have to get approval for that. Now, yes, it should have been like on the tip of my tongue when I first read this article going, oh, well, obviously that's illegal. You can't do that. But because I've been so far removed, that is not fresh in my mind. And I don't ever recall being instructed on this particular emoluments clause in the Constitution, unless it was one of the myriad of briefings that we received in basic training, which how could anyone possibly remember all of them? You are deprived of food and sleep, you're exhausted, you're in constant training, and you're being shoved so much information down your throat, there's no possible way you would be able to retain all that information, especially this obscure line in the emoluments clause. So they do stress on you in your service that while you're in active duty, of course you don't sell secrets. That's called spying, and that is illegal. In which case, some people in this article, it was noted, were charged for selling sensitive military information to China in March. But, you know, for the Marine Corps fighter pilot Daniel Duggan in 2022, who was in Australia and allegedly training PLA pilots, how would he know they're PLA pilots unless they came out and said that they were? We live in a multicultural world. If you just happen to be in Australia, it doesn't mean that if someone has a Chinese accent, that they're a Chinese national citizen. They could have been raised in China, moved away, and became a pilot somewhere else. Like, where there's smoke does not always mean there is fire. So yes, you'll have to dive into the individual circumstances of Daniel Duggan to find out if he in fact knew or not, which is what the whole extradition of the United States and then the later charges are going to be contested in court over. But on its surface, this is not a simple black and white issue. And it's kind of scary. Because the fact is that a lot of people go into the military in order to get training that they could then use in the civilian and corporate sector. That's the whole point, that they'd go in for training. And the military obviously doesn't want foreign governments to be able to come in and pick off their trained soldiers or their trained veterans. Of course not. But how the hell would you know? This is something that as a soldier, as someone who is getting out of the military, transitioning to civilian world, or a veteran who is already in the civilian world, you need to do your due diligence on any contract-based work that comes your way. You have to, because if you're found out that it's actually a foreign government that you don't have prior approval to be working for, because you are no longer a full-fledged citizen of the United States, you are now an asset, a military asset to the United States under your former military service. And that's something that people just don't understand for some reason. Yes, going into the military sometimes feels like the only option for some people. Or maybe, you know, for me personally, I went in so I could afford college because I couldn't afford it otherwise. I didn't have a choice. If I wanted to go to college and start my career, I had to go in the military first. And once you go into the military, you are no longer a fully fledged citizen of these United States. You do not have all of the rights that every other citizen does. For example, if you're a citizen who went to college and went to pilot school on your own dime and then went for to work for some sort of third-party corporate entity that ended up having ties to China, you would not be put into jail for that because you don't have ties to the military. But if you went the military route to learn that and then did the exact same thing for the exact same company, you could be sent to prison. That's how it works. Military service members, you have to understand, you do not have the same rights as other civilians. And civilians, you have to understand that the people who step up to fight on your behalf for your country are giving up some of the same rights that you're able to enjoy in, that you refuse to step up and fight on your own behalf, simply because they go in and do it, because they work for the military for that period of time. And you may argue whether it's fair or not, but that doesn't fucking matter. The reality is we signed a contract when we went into the military service, and that contract will be held over us for eternity, no matter what. So while I don't think it's as black and white as it's presented, because there are third-party private companies, you know, that are sort of retroactively working with the Chinese military, that we would never be able to find out on our own without some form of government resource providing that information. So here's the deal. My solution to all of this. The military should have a website which states every single company that leads back to China. It should be really simple. Because you don't want to punish a veteran who just simply is ignorant. They may not know because they can't do the financial backtracking through third parties and foreign government bank accounts. But the U.S. military can. The FBI can. So have a website that says these companies are clearly tied through these different financial ways to the Chinese government. If you're approached by representatives of these companies, do not go into, do not sign a contract with them. If you do that, then you're protecting your own assets. And that is incredibly important as a U.S. military service member or former service member to know that you can't work with these people because of the threat to the national security. Now, if you're an expat and you just have bad taste in your mouth of the U.S. military, which there's good reason for that in a lot of people's lives, and you just don't want to be aligned with the U.S. anymore, well, then go become a citizen of that other country. Go through the proper channels and then do it. That way, you're not going to be extradited back because you're not selling secrets. You're simply a citizen of that new country that you want to be a part of. But understand, the U.S. does not let go easily. It's got a grip on its citizens and on its veterans and on its service members. You try to pry the fingers open without proper going through the proper lanes, you're going to find that it's going to squeeze you dead. So keep that in mind, people. I don't like how this article is trying to connect the espionage of some service members to the recruitment of non-service members, veterans. Because ultimately, it looks like a propaganda piece when you do that. China is the big bad guy, and they are trying to destroy Western civilization, and you know they're coming for you. This is propaganda, and we have to be able to look through this. Look, these are private citizens who were service members, who were contracted out by a third-party corporation in order to train pilots. That's what they went into the military for. That's what they served to learn. And that's what they're then doing on the outside. It is hard for me to overtly condemn them for their actions when that's what they went in to do. That's what they wanted to learn in order to do as a job. And then suddenly now they're out and they get that job. You're gonna jail them? How about you first let them know who they're working for, give them an opportunity to get the fuck out of that job, and then if they refuse at that point, or if there's any evidence to then prove that they knew beforehand, then charge them with espionage or the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution. But don't just preemptively condemn a citizen simply because of ignorance, or you as the military service didn't provide them the tools they needed to determine whether or not these were foreign government corporations.
All right, soldiers, that's all I have for you today. Comedy! Attention! Haul out!
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire, and year one Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us. For we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might!
Hail Satan, full of might!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Cursed are they!
Cursed are they!
The God adorers!
The God adorers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
Of the Nazarene eunuch!
Of the Nazarene eunuch!
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast. And as always, thank you to Magister Campbell for that insightful episode of The Tower. That's a fascinating topic and something that I think any kind of veterans who do any kind of contract work really need to look into. You've got to do your due diligence and make sure that you're squared away, because that can come back to hammer you. And we often say, just because our contract ended doesn't mean our oath ended, and our oath of enlistment is for life. Well, this is just kind of legal proof that our enlistment is for life, according to the U.S. Constitution. So that's very interesting stuff. And I highly suggest any veteran out there who does any kind of contract work, especially if you happen to have international or global contracts, do your due diligence. Make sure your paperwork is in order, because you don't want that coming back to bite you in the ass. All right, gentlemen, let's shift gears and talk about our other big topic today, and that is felons. As everyone knows, we try to maintain a kind of middle-of-the-road, non-political aspect to this, unless politics directly affect veterans. And we're going to attempt to navigate this hairy topic while doing that same thing. But the reason we are talking about felons is because a former president of the United States has been convicted of 34 felonies and is still eligible to run for president, meaning that if he is elected, the commander-in-chief of the military will be a convicted felon. But if you serve in the military, you're not allowed to be a felon. And if you're a veteran and get a felony, you can lose some of your benefits. This presents an interesting conundrum, and so I want to talk about it. And I think I have the perfect people here to talk about it, because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, on this panel is the Veteran Service Officer of the Infernal Legion, Dwayne Burns.
We have
Raul Atondo, who works with veterans in Veteran Treatment Court out in Arizona, and occasionally has to help mentor veteran felons. And our Vice Commander, Warlock Rick Kohlmeyer, is himself a felon and a veteran. What better panel to talk about felonies and how they impact service members than these guys? So let's jump into it. First and foremost, you are not allowed to enlist in the United States military if you are a convicted felon. Where do we stand on that?
That is kind of true. I had a teenage record that the military sealed when I enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
I had a felony assault on there, obviously some drunken disorderlies, teenage shit, and some drug possession stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the military took a look at all of it and took a look at my ASVAB, whatever else, had me pick a job. And because of my job, I had to have the top secret clearance. So they made my
juvenile record.
Juvenile disappear. I mean, it, to this day, it still can't be accessed open by anybody or anything. And that's come up, actually, since I got out of the military, it came up with job searches and stuff like that about why they couldn't access anything from my juvenile past. And I explained to them, you know, I was military, top secret, et cetera. But, you know, they will let some people in depending upon, I guess, what the felonies are.
That's true. there's a, as the recruiters are fond of saying, there's waivers for everything if you're smart enough to find them.
You know, so they did let a known criminal in when they let me in.
Right. I guess we can kind of start from an almost philosophical standpoint here. Should we be letting felons in the military?
I could think of a lot of felons out there that could have benefited, and, you know, they fucked up, you know, they screwed up in life and made a mistake. But I think a lot, there's a lot of them that could have benefited from it and probably would have loved to have served.
I don't think it's any secret that the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the first world. We have an incarceration problem. We lock people up for a lot of stupid shit. I've heard from a lot of corrections officers and former and current inmates that they roughly see prison as kind of a 95-5 split, meaning that 5% of the people who are in prison. Now, if you're serving in prison, you're a felon. That's how it works. So 5% of the people in prison deserve to be there, should be there, and should be removed from society. And the other 95% just got hemmed up in something stupid and got railroaded by the system. And that's coming from both sides of the argument, from the inmates themselves and from the corrections officers who are dealing with these inmates. I've heard a couple lawyers kind of express similar numbers to that. So I think, to Dwayne's point, there's a legitimate argument to be made that there's a lot of people who could benefit from the military who just happen to have a felony record that shouldn't be denied entry just because they happen to have a felony record. And there's a lot of jobs in the military that don't require security clearances. I know Rick had a very specific career path in the Navy, but there's a lot of jobs that don't require a security clearance.
Yeah. The stuff I did as a youth, it was dumb stuff, you know. And if you're going in the military, you know, unless you're like a 25-year-old kid and you just got out for doing 3 years for fucking GTA and some rape charge and kidnapping or something, you know. We obviously don't want somebody, you know, like that. But, you know, if you were a dumb kid like me and you got in some fights and you smoked some dope and you drank some beer underage and shit, I mean, you shouldn't hold that against them. You know, as far as the shit that I did after I got out of the Navy, the shit that did land me in prison, no. I would not have wanted that person in my military either. You know, the person that I became out there, you know, slinging dope and shooting up drugs and, you know.
That's a good segue. Let's segue to the status of felons as it applies to being a veteran, right? Because as most people know, felons lose a lot of their rights. Well, most of their rights while they're incarcerated. But there's a lot of rights that they don't get back once they're no longer incarcerated. We obviously know that felons while they're incarcerated can't vote. But that can be reversed in most states. That can be reversed once you get out.
I got my back to vote, and I'm working on my. I'm working on.
I think there's maybe two or three states that don't allow felons to vote for life, but that's negligible. You know? But you can't own a firearm. But veteran felons have extra considerations to take into account. We pulled this up. Thank you to our VSO. What happens to a veteran who's convicted of a felony? If a veteran is convicted of a felony and imprisoned for more than 60 days, their disability compensation payments will be reduced. Veterans with a disability level of 20% or more will have their compensation lowered to 10%, and those with a 10% disability level will have their payment reduced by 50%.
Dang.
Veterans receiving a VA pension will have their payments suspended on the 61st day of imprisonment. Payments may be reinstated upon release if the veteran meets VA eligibility requirements. Veterans in work release programs or residing in halfway houses, however, may still be eligible for education benefit. And to talk about one of the other big benefits that veterans receive, Rick, because you're going through this right now, you are a convicted felon and you're using the VA for health care. So clearly veteran felons still have access to VA health care.
Yes. I had never even filed or got any of my veterans VA rights or anything like that until after I had gotten out of prison. And right. That was because I had gotten sick real bad, and somebody had said to me, you know, you're a veteran, why don't you use your VA benefits? And I didn't know anything about it, and I went down to the VA in Phoenix, and I got hooked up with my VA benefits.
And just to be clear, this was before the Infernal Legion existed. Had we been around, we would have walked Rick through that process.
Oh, yes. We're talking about this was 2003 when I joined the VA in Phoenix.
So there's a lot for a veteran who finds themselves convicted of a felony, or as we're seeing with some in Washington, D.C. right now, even prior to conviction, that they must consider when it comes to their benefits. Because as we were talking about before this recorded, we don't actually know the answer to this, but to Dwayne and I's best guess is that if your disability gets cut like that while you're incarcerated, you're going to have to go back through the process to get it raised once you're out. And that could take forever, and you may get denied. The pension will likely come back, but you'll have to go through the whole process to get it back. And I have heard of cases, I don't have any right here in front of me to cite, but I have heard of cases where veterans who are receiving compensation from the VA and are convicted of egregious crimes like murder or rape may have their disability benefits rerouted to the victims of their crimes for life.
As they should be.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question there. We are Satanists, after all. We are Lex Talionis all day long. Raul, I want to kind of kick it over to you real quick. Being a veteran has a lot of negative things when you receive a felony. It can also occasionally help you in the court process. And that's kind of something that you work with pretty frequently with the Veterans Treatment Court. So can you kind of walk us through how that works for a veteran who's facing a felony charge?
So let's go over an overview of what I found online. I'm going to give you the book thing, and then I'll give you what I actually experienced.
Sure.
So this says an overview. Overview of Veterans Courts. Veterans Court is a collaborative process that includes the prosecutor, defense counsel, judge, and sometimes the federal or local state's Department of Veteran Affairs and the other community-based support organizations. The goal of Veterans Court is to rehabilitate and restore veterans as active contributing members of the community, of their community. Veterans Court programs typically focus on veterans who are currently in or entering the criminal justice system. The court creates and supervises treatment plans to address the underlying causes of the veteran's behavior and or substance abuse issues. Issues commonly addressed by the such treatment programs include post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, anger issues, domestic violence, alcohol abuse, and drug abuse.
Basically, a good weekend for Rick back in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Hey,
and then I got that traumatic brain injury a few years ago, so you know why that one is.
So when Rick gets booked into the court system, they give Rick has, we'll say it's it's alcohol abuse. Or so he does something that lands him inside the court system. He's given two options. He can either go through the traditional court system without VTC, Veterans Treatment Court, and he can hire a lawyer, and he can go through the system, he can go to jail, service time in jail, service time in prison. Or he's given a option to go through Veterans Treatment Court, and then that dick says, hey, what's Veterans Treatment Court? And he gives them an idea of what it is. He says, all right, let me try this Veterans Treatment Court. So it's basically, like I said, it was earlier, the judge, defense counsel, prosecutor, their lawyer, etc. We help guide them through this process. So it's the whole team. So the judge, our local judge, he is our CO, our commanding officer. And then he has two bailiffs, and they work as like an XO and a first sergeant. So those guys make up a team. And then every Wednesday, they go up to the podium and they tell the judge about what's going on. So that current client, that veteran, that dick shows up and says, hey, everything's going okay. I just found out about this Veterans Treatment Court. He is given a mentor. So at the current moment, there's about 8 to 9 of us mentors certified by Arizona Complete Health as a peer support recovery specialist. So I gave up a bunch of my Saturdays.
That's a fancy title that you got there, Ron.
Yeah, I know. I got a certificate too.
This episode is brought to you by Underworld Amusements. Since 2007, Underworld Amusements has been creating, producing, publishing, and distributing Curious Sundries and Callous Broadsides. From the Satanic Scriptures by Magus Peter H. Gilmore to Might is Right, the authoritative edition by Ragnar Redbeard, Underworld Amusements is your source for the most dangerous books ever written. Visit underworldamusements.com for more information.
I became a mentor. I was grandfathered into the program by our district. Fast forward, there is maybe 3 to 4 of us mentors that were doing this thing. And it ended up just being 3 of us. And then they hung around for a bit, myself included. And then eventually they had to get back to their lives because this is a volunteer thing. We're not getting paid for this. And at the same time, it kind of eats away a little bit at you. And you're like, man, I got stuff to do. I tell people that I'm a professional big brother for the Justice.
Right. So, and you were telling me back when this first started for you, you were telling me that basically if a veteran who is facing these serious charges, if they complete this kind of veterans court program, they can have those charges reduced or removed completely, right?
So it depends on various factors. Everything from if you miss a UA, your analysis, you might as well be pissing hot.
Right.
So you have to be sober. You can't drink. You can't. It sounds silly, but let's just get this out of the way. No cocaine, no weed, no meth, no nothing, no alcohol. Even Tylenol or prescription drugs need to be authorized by your PCP, by your primary care provider.
Sounds a lot like parole.
I say you're locking it, no weed.
Yeah. So we work with you guys. Every other week, we do a meeting at an undisclosed location where they have...
That's probably smart.
Yeah. And an undisclosed location. And it's a bunch of... it's all the mentors, including shout out to our mentor coordinator, Mr. Derek Fry. He's come on board recently. I've been in with the program for about 4 years now. So it's me, him, and there's about, like I said earlier, about 8 other mentors, and there'll probably be more in the future. When we do these meetings in this, we'll call it a FOB. Let's think of it as a FOB. So we're inside this little building. It's a little room.
Forward operating base for the listeners.
Yes. inside this little FOB. So it's all the mentees, the veterans that have gotten into trouble. So Derek or whoever your mentor coordinator is in any state, because there are a few of us, there's, let's throw this in real fast. There are veterans treatment courts in East Valley Regional Veterans Court, Maricopa County Superior Court, Coconino County Superior Court,
Maricopa Bullhead County, City. That's Rick's favorite place.
Bullhead City Municipal Court, Kingman's Veterans Court, Lake Havasu, Mesa Municipal, Phoenix Municipal, Pima County Justice Court, and Tucson Municipal and Regional. So that's just in the Arizona area. This program was started in New York in, I believe, 2011 by a judge that saw all these returning veterans. And he's like, you guys are veterans? And they're like, yeah. So he's like, we can do better than this. Veterans Treatment Court, VTC, started as a response to so many veterans that had gotten into trouble with the justice system. So let's do something for them. So finally, it started, other little chapters started popping up, specialty courts. Each mentor is giving a mentee one or more. And we talk with said mentee, and we meet up with them at this FOB, and we talk about issues. There's a small philosophical area to this, and you get to learn about yourself. You get to do these classes, and you get to meet with one of us. So a lot of our mentees are homeless. They stay at a mission. So then I will tell my mentee, hey, I'll go pick you up. So now I can go pick up my mentee from the place he's staying. So I give him a ride to his UA.
Everything he's describing sounds like the same training I've had in behavioral health specialist work.
Yeah, it's very similar.
You know, working with people and taking to their appointments and, you know, stuff like that.
But, well, I think it's important. We kind of touched on it at the beginning of this conversation. It's important to remember a couple of things here. one, not everyone who's a felon is a bad guy.
No.
You know, they may have just run afoul of the law, made some stupid decisions. They might have just got, you know, hung up because of something else at play. Really worth pointing out that veterans are prone to having issues. Anyone listening to this should know this because we talk about it all the time. Veterans have PTSD. They have traumatic brain injury. Especially combat veterans have a whole host of other issues. And in addition to all of those medical issues, you're talking about, for the most part, generically speaking, you're talking about a guy who was 16, 17 years old and was turned into a killer, was trained on how to do that effectively, sent overseas, required to do it, and then cut loose and sent back to the civilian world. That's a recipe for problems. So you're going to have probably a higher rate of issues amongst veterans than the regular population just because of all the circumstances at play.
My military training and stuff, and while we don't do as much like with the Army and the Corps and stuff, we still, you know, do training with firearms, or which I already knew firearms before I went in the military. But that being said, a lot of my military training when I went back out onto the street after I got out of the military actually made me a better soldier on the street.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing too, man. Techniques and tactics came in very handy for doing shady shit. So when we have all of this stuff kind of coalesces that can lead a veteran to having a really hard time. Now, am I advocating for a lawless society where these people should not be held accountable? Absolutely not. I'm still a Satanist. And I do want to talk about that for a minute because there's this unspoken kind of rule within the Church of Satan. We are a law and order organization. One of our key principles is lex talionis, or an eye for an eye, criminal justice. We obviously believe in vengeance. And there is the perception that we do not allow felons into the Church of Satan. And then on top of that, even if they do get in, that we don't allow them to be spokespeople or members of the priesthood. And I can tell you unequivocally, that is false. Obviously, proof is right here with us in Rick Kohlmeier. You're very a warlock, so you're in the hierarchy. Much like anything else, while we believe in harsh, strict punishment for people who break laws, we also understand that people are people, right? People are going to make bad decisions. And so the Church of Satan views, as any Satanist should, each individual as an individual and looks at them and how they are moving through life. If they've learned their lesson, changed their behavior, if they've become a more responsible person, then that person absolutely can join the Church of Satan. They absolutely can become an active member, and they absolutely can one day get appointed to the priesthood. Now, I kind of think that it may be a good thing. I'm big on, anyone who's seen me online knows I'm huge on gatekeeping, especially Satanism and the Church of Satan itself. I take this organization and this religion very seriously. I would rather less people join than more. If that makes sense. So I'm of two minds about it. I kind of like, hey, if that's a roadblock to you and you think that you can't get in because of that, good. Stay away. But at the same time, if you're a veteran who got caught a felony because you fucked up, you made a mistake, and you've done your thing and you've served your time and you're back on the right track, don't let that be a hindrance to joining the organization that represents the religion you espouse.
Be honest on your application. That's all you can do.
Yeah, make sure you tell them. That's a big, we've all heard the phrase, if you lie, you fly. Make sure you tell them because Central does indeed do background checks on people going in for active membership. So.
It's funny what Central knows or can know.
We have many, many members with the skills to do more thorough background checks than a basic Google search can do.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, you have to be honest on your application, which if you can't do that, you're not being honest with yourself. We don't want you any.
This episode is brought to you by Pando Commando. Founded by veterans of the Army's 10th Mountain Division, Pando Commando is your source for the best veteran gear on the market. Pando Commando specializes in military-themed caps, clothing, and even coffee. Pando Commando is 100% owned and operated by veterans of the United States Armed Forces. Visit pandocommando.com for more information.
If there's one positive that came out of on the heels of the global war on terrorism, it is this recognition that veterans have, they see a lot, they go through a lot, and they have unique issues that don't affect a large part of the population. I like that. I'm glad that that came out and that we're in a position, societally speaking, to kind of offer more to the veteran than just a cold shoulder or a middle finger. Ultimately, there are a lot of things for veterans that veterans are unaware of. And that's why organizations like the VFW and the American Legion and so on and so forth, and of course, the Infernal Legion exists. If you happen to be a veteran listening to this podcast and you are in danger of getting convicted of a felony, reach out. Talk to us. We will do our best to help you out, and the same goes for any other. So until next time, gentlemen, thank you so much for doing this. Raul, thank you for everything you're doing for veterans down there in Arizona. Rick, thank you for being willing to talk about your past and your mistakes. And Dwayne, who's not here because of a technical issue now, thank you for bringing up this topic because it was his idea that we discussed this. So, gentlemen, until we can do it again, thank you very much, and hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
There is a new veteran crisis hotline number. If you or a veteran you know are experiencing a crisis, please dial 988 and press 1. Once again, that is 988 and press 1 when prompted.